Welcome to the radio program Genesis and the Gates of Hell. Everyone knows the book of Genesis, even if they haven't studied it, but the gates of hell is a less known phrase that is in the New Testament. It is the phrase used by Christ when he was with the disciples at Caesarea Philippi near the Sea of Galilee. Christ was telling his disciples that the church will go on the offensive against Satan, and Satan will not prevail, but the church will prevail. That is what this radio program is about. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Is that true? For a Christian, it is truth. In John chapter 1, it says, "All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not." When your children come home from school or college with the notion that the stories in Genesis are untrue because science says it is not true, how do you respond? When you ask, "What are you talking about?" they will generally respond, "Science says so." Your response should be that science has changed, but the Bible has not. You can no longer reject the stories of Genesis because science disproves it, because recent scientific discoveries reaffirm the stories in Genesis. All right, welcome to the Genesis and Gates of Hell radio show again. I'm Marshall Bandy, and Greg Grayson is here, and we are in chapter 16 of Genesis. We just got through with the time when Abraham received a covenant from God, and they had the division of the animals. I guess you'd call them a sacrifice, but on the other hand, God walked through them. I think that's how we described it. I think that's how the scripture describes it.
Cutting a covenant.
Right.
Cutting a covenant.
So now we are in chapter 16, and it begins with Sarai, who will later be known as Sarah, and Abram, who will later be known as Abraham. So if we occasionally use the word Sarah and we occasionally use the word Abraham, you'll just have to forgive us. Excuse me. So anyway, what was your first thought or your first idea or your first communication regarding chapter 16 of Genesis?
You know, when we think about the story that we're fixing to go through in chapter 16 about Sarah and Abram and Hagar, we tend to think about Abram and Sarai as being the chief players in it, and certainly they were. But as I read this chapter, I really got impressed upon how Hagar factored into it. And so as I studied it, I wanted to try and approach it from Hagar's perspective as opposed to just concentrating on Abram and Sarai's actions. So that was my first inclination as I looked at this. I read through it again, and then looked at some various commentaries and researched. And so Hagar, I think, is a good example, and there's something to be learned from Hagar in this chapter.
No doubt. Hagar, I think we should go through the story a little bit.
Well, sure.
Most people know this, but Hagar is the handmaiden. Didn't say slave, but you have to wonder if the word handmaiden didn't mean slave, and certainly a maid.
Probably a maid of some standing. Right. They had a lot of servants, Abram and Sarai did.
And she was from Egypt. She was not from the area of Earth. Now, she may have lived there. She may have come with Abram from the land of Ur, but she was from Egypt.
A lot of commentators think that she most likely was one of the gifts that the Egyptian pharaoh gave to Abram when he remember, lied about his wife.
And, that's right. Yeah, I forgot
and
about
so
that.
A lot of commentators conjecture that she was given to Abram by the Pharaoh. And we see that when she fled, she was going back to Egypt by the main road that went through Shur back toward Egypt. So she was going back home.
Well, when you use the word commentator in this area of Georgia, you have to be careful because they might be thinking you're talking about an Irish tater or you're talking about a Idaho tater.
A commentator.
So yeah. Anyway, no, these are books and references that I guess you'd call them the highbrow theologians who have studied this over years and years, and they've written these commentaries, and there are many of them very good. So anyway, yes, she was a servant to Sarai, the wife of Abram, and they had no children. That is Sarai and Abram. And Sarai wanted a child. It was apparent. And she had been promised a child previously. Mm-hmm. And she laughed at the idea of it when God told her that she was going to be a mother.
Yeah, specifically when Abram was told that he would have a child with Sarah, he laughed. And that's why... Isaac got his name, which means laughter.
Yeah.
But I don't think they laughed in an indignant way. I think they laughed more in the sense that you gotta be kidding me, Lord. Yeah. How magnificent are you to do that? I think it was a laughter of joy. I don't think it was a laughter of unbelief.
Let me move on.
Yeah, sure.
We got to get the story in people's minds so that we can talk about the other things besides just the story. The surface of the story is that Sarah went to Abram and said, "Hey, why don't you? I can't get pregnant. I can't get pregnant. Can't have any kids. I want you to take my handmaiden Hagar." And I want you to have sex with her. I want you to conceive a child, and we'll take the child as our own, and that way we'll have a child.
Yep.
Pretty much, that's what she said.
Yep.
Now, there is a... then she gets pregnant, and Sarah and the handmaiden, Hagar, begin getting it eat on each other's nerves because Hagar is proud because she's carrying Abram's child. Sarah is jealous because Hagar is carrying Abraham's child. And Hagar is obviously taking advantage of the situation. And Sarah complains to Abram and says, "What am I to do? We've done this thing with Hagar, and now she's basically jealous." And Abram throws up his hands, I guess, and says, "Do with your handmaiden as you will." And so she ran her off.
Yep, pretty much.
And so she's heading back to Egypt, stops at a well, runs into an angel, just happens to run into him on the side of the road. So they're at a well, and there's this angel from heaven. Didn't just accidentally run into him. And so we'll stop there. Basically, she gets back. She goes back to Sarah. The angel tells her to go back. And that's pretty much the end of the... that's the real short form of it.
That's a high-level summary, I think. You did well. A couple of good points that we can take from it. I think if we go back and look at the very first of the chapter, Sarah says, Sarah, Abram's wife, bore him no children. And so she said to Abram, "Behold now, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing." I think that's very interesting in that she's blaming it on God that she doesn't have any children at this point. Now, she's been promised. Abram's been promised. But now she's turning and saying, God's not letting me have any children.
I think we need to point out the age here. We hadn't really pointed that out.
Yeah, how old was Abram?
Abram would have been in his mid-70s.
86.
And she would have been about 10 years younger, maybe.
Maybe. But 85. I'm sorry, I stand correct. 85 years old.
That's how old Abram was. And we kind of add backwards from that because it says that he's 99 when Isaac is born.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow in these ages, you can kind of calculate that it was about that Ishmael was 13 or 14 years old when Isaac was born. So that puts him in the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sarai is under 80, but still in her 70s.
Mm.
And there is a rule in perpetuities and at the law called the fertile octogenarian.
Oh.
And that is you cannot leave property for more than the I think it's 80 years beyond any person in life.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
And so it's the rule of for the fertile octogenarian in the rule against perpetuities, which means you can't leave things over and over. You can't
just
leave things.
Just can't wait. Yeah.
You just can't leave it that way forever.
Right.
At some point in time, the law brings an end to it.
So any heirs can't get over 80 years old at waiting on their inheritance.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Makes
sense. So let's see, what is it? People like to say that the Bible doesn't have anything to do with our law.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, it does.
That's where our law came from, right?
That's right. That's where it came from. Mm-hmm. That's why it's called the law, and that's why it's called the Torah, the law of Torah. So anyway, I'll shut up on that issue, and you go ahead.
And so Sarah said unto Abram, behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing, blaming it on God, and to rightfully so, because children are a gift from God, no doubt about it. He blesses us with children, and the Bible says so. But she says, I pray thee, go into unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her, which was a common practice that wasn't frowned on in that day. This wasn't something that was a bad thing or something that was socially unacceptable for him to go and have sex with his wife's maid. But now, yet,
let's talk about that for just a second. In the ancient East, or in the ancient world, there was a couple of terms for this. It's called ceremonial simulation of birth or fictional childbirth. And in Greece, one way they did it was a woman would lay down next to a woman who is about to give birth. And when she gives birth, the baby is handed to the woman that is not giving birth. She passes the baby through her clothes, hands the baby to her husband. Her husband holds the child up toward the sky, and that constitutes adoption.
Isn't that something?
And it becomes their child and is not the child of the progenitors who were the mother giving birth and the father. Mm-hmm. Now, in some instances, the father was the progenitor. This could have been a slave or whatever, but
right.
that's one method. Now, and we don't know exactly what the ceremonial activity was in under Hammurabi's code. A woman would sit over the woman giving birth in a chair, and as the child is born, the child is being born is handed to the mother, and then the mother hands the child to the father. Same kind of an idea, but the idea being that this child was, in fact, Sarai's child and Abram's child, but it's pretty obvious from the conversations that are going on that Sarai is jealous and sees this whole idea of a ceremonial birth going south.
You know... I laugh at this. I was discussing this with my wife. And from a wife's perspective, you only get this from a wife's perspective. I never thought about it, but she said, you know, I bet Hagar was really ugly. Probably one of the most homely-looking maids that Sarah had, because she wouldn't have given Abram the most beautiful, young, nubile maid that she had in her staff, you know.
And she probably wouldn't want to take a maid that was pretty.
That's right. So Hagar, I don't know if her name says anything. I have to look up and see what her name means. But this is an interesting point. So she says to go into her maid, it may be that I may obtain children by her. And it goes on to say, and Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarah. And, you know, that was just reminiscent of a much older story I recall us studying. And unto Adam, God, he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife. Sarah come up with this scheme, and Abram listened, hearkened to it, and went along with her. Just like Eve came to Adam and said, hey, I think we ought to try this. And Adam hearkened to the voice of his wife. I'm not saying don't listen to your wife, boys, but I am saying you better listen to God first.
Well, you know, she was promoting adultery.
At the time, I don't think it was seen as such, but she was promoting what she was promoting here, and this is the first chief lesson. She was promoting, let's not wait on God. I'm tired of waiting on him. He's not going to give me a child.
Impatience and lack of faith.
Absolutely. Let's do it our way.
Yep.
Let's take it and take care of it. Let's do something for God, and let's not wait on his timing.
Not only adultery, but also polygamy.
It was polygamy.
But there was no indication that they were married, that Hagar ever married Abram.
There was no marriage ceremony. That Hagar became his mistress or his concubine. I believe those were the two titles of it. But and what happened was Hagar got uppity. It says that she despised her mistress. She despised Sarah. In other words, she started walking around saying, you know, I'm favored and you're not.
Yeah.
And look what I've done. And the funny part about this, I think it's funny, is Sarai comes to Abram and says, it's your fault. She even curses him. She says, may God's judgment be on you because of this. Right? And in a sense, it is his fault because he listened to her and he went along with it. And he demonstrated just as much unbelief as Sarai did. As a matter of fact, I think he should be held more accountable than Sarai in all of this. And so, in a sense, Sarah was somewhat correct when she said that, it was all his fault. He should have told her,
no,
God said, and that settles it, but he didn't. And I mean, you're seeing Abram coming off of the last chapter where God accounted to him righteousness because of his faith. And here, now we see Abram deciding to take matters into his own hands and not believe what God said.
Sarah took matters into her own hands.
She did too.
And mm-hmm. Abram went along with it.
Yep.
There's no indication that this was Abram's idea.
That's right.
As you said, he should have said no.
He should. He's the leader.
Yeah.
He's the leader of that household. And so when they practiced unbelief, I think any time that we do not wait on God, we're practicing unbelief.
I have used this example before, but I'll use it again. I was having lunch with somebody up in Chattanooga, and it was 15 minutes or 10 before the waiter ever came to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to wait on the food preparation. It was a nice restaurant, pretty nice. But I'm used to getting my food from a window
mm-hmm.
at McDonald's or Hardee's or Wendy's or Arby's or whatever, and getting it in a matter of seconds.
Right.
and so impatient. Well, that's the way our culture is now. However, that doesn't mean that that's not the way people have always been. We've always been impatient.
That's right. That's right.
And it's just a different degree of impatience.
You know, and although our justification is based on our faith in God and His promises, but our justification is not based on the perfection of our obedience. We're going to see Abram.
It's like the covenant. God promises to do this. He's not. His is a one-way covenant. He's not relying on us.
No.
To do anything.
Yes. Yeah. That
was. This is what I promise I'm going to do.
And it's all on me.
It's all on me, and you don't have to do nothing. It would be nice if you would obey the law,
yeah.
It would be nice if you would have faith.
Trust
it would be
me.
Nice mm-hmm. if you trusted me.
Get out of my way.
But just, that's right. That's right. All right, so anyway, go ahead.
Reminds me of my child when they were young. You'd be doing something. They would want to help. I can help. I can do it. I can help. And you just let them get out of the way. So, but so when you see, when you take in go through fleshly means to achieve something that's divinely promised.
Oh, I've got something better.
Okay.
The child's, you're trying to get the child wants to help, says, okay, here, hold the flashlight.
And then they start shining up everywhere.
So looking everywhere except where you're working.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
But so now we see that through their unbelief that trouble ensues and problems come about. And I think Abram, and I think it says it over in Hebrews, that Abram probably thought, yeah, maybe this is the way God meant it to be. Because he had Ishmael for 13 years, I think, from 85. He had Isaac at 99. So 13, 14 years, he had Ishmael. And for that entire time, Ishmael was God's promise to Abram, and I think Abram thought that. I think he and Sarai firmly believed that that was the child that God meant for them to have. Until God came to him and said, no.
No.
No, no. But
there should have been a clue. I'll tell you what, when there should have been a clue. It's when the angel of the Lord told
Hagar,
he will be a wild donkey of a man.
Yeah, that's a very interesting description.
That was a different kind of person than Abram was.
And, you know, that angel of the Lord actually, we'll go back to some of the commentaries, that was God.
Oh, sure.
And this is the lesson we hear and see looking at it from Hagar's viewpoint. She, not only did God fulfill his promise, and his covenant to Abram, but he also, because she had a child with Abram, she also partook in that covenant, and God told her that Ishmael would be a man of many, many descendants, that she would be a man of many, many descendants. So the angel of the Lord came to her when she was running away at this well. This well was called Bershaberoi or something like
yeah.
that. And so this, the angel of the Lord, which a lot of commentaries say it was the pre-incarnate Christ that she saw. Nobody saw the face of God and lived. That's what the Lord says. But Hagar saw. And as a matter of fact, as she cried, Ishmael not only received this covenant of being a multitude of descendants, but his name actually means God hears. See, and so Hagar's cry was that she didn't think God cared about her at all. She wasn't of the same descent as Abram and Sarai, but God came down and saw her, and she saw God. So Hagar's amazed that God appeared to her in the form that he did, not in all of his glory because it would have burnt her up, but he most likely appeared to her as a pre-incarnate Christ. And he said that he saw her and she saw him. And that is a beautiful, beautiful lesson. God cares about the oppressed. He cares about all people. And
he cared about an Egyptian servant.
That's right. That's
which
right.
He was.
We find in Psalms 34, verse 15, the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous and his ears toward their cry. And so Hagar is told to turn around and go back. And she does. And she bears Ishmael to Abram at the age of 86. And so we see that not only is God's covenant fulfilled through Hagar with her son Ishmael being a wild donkey of a man. Ishmael was, what that meant was that he would be beholden to no one. He would not be oppressed by a master. He would be free and he would be able to range and go and do as he pleased. And he did.
And he would also be against authority.
That's right.
He would be,
yes.
He would go his own way.
He'd be independent, his own
and
person.
And it also said he would put his hand on people,
mm-hmm.
which means he was a fighter.
Exactly.
And unfriendly, and even fights with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And now you look at the Arabs,
yep.
who proclaim to be descendants of Ishmael,
mm-hmm.
and you look at how they act in the world, in their tribal society, you say, yeah, boy, if that's not a description of them, I don't know what is.
Ishmael, in Psalms, it talks about the freedom and the carefree attitude that the Bedouins had. And Ishmael was had that same kind of character, that he was wild and he was free. And he had many descendants that came from him. So he was blessed with the same covenant because he was the son of Abram.
Yeah. We were talking about the age. I think in the chapter it actually says that Abram was 86 years old when Ishmael was born. 84 would be 80, and 6 makes him 86.
When Ishmael was born, that's correct.
When Ishmael was born.
Yep, and he's 99 when Isaac was born.
And in Ephesians 6:4-9, there is an explanation as to how servants are to act. And I'll read it from the King James. It says, "Servants are to be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and singleness of your heart as unto Christ." Well, let's face it. Hagar was not acting that way.
No.
Once she conceived.
No.
And ye masters, do the same unto things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. In other words, God doesn't care whether you're the master or you're the servant. He's going to treat you all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And you should treat your maid, your servant,
Even your animals
with forbearing. You're not to threaten. And what did she do? She ran her off.
She did.
How much more threatening can you do than that?
And honestly, Sarai and Abram really ill-used her and mistreated her and later ran her off again.
Well, are we about done? We've got zero time, so I guess it's time to bring this session of the Genesis and the Gates of Hell show to a close. Thank you, Greg. It's been a good time.
Yep. Go forward, do good work, make good choices. We are not mighty by the world's measure, nor wise, nor of noble standing. And yet God has called us out as a royal priesthood, that we should show forth his truth and declare his glory. Though our program rejoices in seeing the handiwork of God's creation, and we stand amazed at his order and intelligent design, we do not rest our message there, nor do we seek to persuade or convince you by the wisdom and science of this age. For we are not here to prove God by secular means, nor add to the sufficiency of Christ crucified, which is the power of God unto salvation to all who believe. Until our next broadcast, may the Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace.
Some glad morning when this life is o'er.